It's our Plus One podcast from All Songs Considered. I'm Robin Hilton, along with Bob Boylan. And this week we've got electronic musician Tim Hecker. He's been breaking apart traditional sounds and song structures and bending sonic worlds for nearly 20 years now. This is a piece called Castrati Stack from Tim Hecker's new album, Love Streams. When Tim Hecker talks about the music he makes, he gets deep into the technology of it, deep in a profound way. Safe to say, I've never heard anyone talk about music quite the way he does. At times, it's like he's explaining the deepest science behind quantum physics. But at other times, to hear Tim Hecker talk about making music is pure poetry. He describes sounds not as notes or melodies, but as billowing silver fabrics or white linens or even stranger, like a robot that's suffocating. On this Plus One podcast, a conversation with Tim Hecker about making music out of already existing sounds, in particular, the human voice.
It's kind of like this like process of, I don't know, I've used sculpture before as like an analogy, but it's just like taking digital audio and like rounding it and smoothing it and taking it like a plastic object that can be molded or like clay or something. And I work in a really loose way that doesn't have like a clear pattern, but it's like about sound manipulation. And, you know, it started in some ways like taking a source and bending it beyond recognition. It was committed abstraction in music making or something.
So let's do this, Tim. Let's take a song. Let's take the piece of music, Violet Monumental One, from your record Love Streams, and let's sort of pull it apart a little. It's how it came to be, and we'll talk about, you know, the vocals, which is new for you in your music, and let's play a little first so people get a flavor of it.
So that piece kind of starts out with this bass line that I jammed with a person I work with often, Carolise Coverdale, and she was playing this kind of almost Jamaican-inspired chromium counterpoint or something you'd call it. And we had this kind of silver texture that was underneath all that that came out of, I think that was the beginning of the piece. I liked that silver undulation. It was almost like a billowing fabric or something.
Wait a minute. Silver undulation. I'm going to just stop you because it's a beautiful image, but it's yet another image on top of an image. So
yes, I work really visually. So for me, like, I just hear that. I think of silver fabrics blowing or something. Uh-huh. And it is what excites me. It's what is like, okay, that's something to construct over or have the foundation upon which a piece can give legs or grow legs. And from that, I performed with another musician in the studio with that as the background. And this comes out of a real live improvisational kind of moment. And we took that instrumental base of these three components, whatever you want to call them, a silver fabric billowing underneath with a bass line, and then a kind of quasi-Jamaican synth line. And I took that to Iceland, and I gave it to Johan Johansson, who is a composer that I worked with on this, and he did a vocal arrangement. We used part of that when we recorded it in studio, but a lot of those actual parts that you heard in terms of the voice were improvisations that we just kind of guided them to sing. Pretend you're an asphyxiating robot. Pretend you just drank way too much cough syrup and you're like, you know.
Well, I wonder what kind of direction you gave Johan.
I told him, I think I told him I was interested in like white linens and fabrics blowing in the sun and like Bruce Nauman and different things that were like of interest to me at that point, you know, and that was it. Like, just write something that you find interesting. And then he sent me some demos, and then it became a score that a conductor just kind of rehearsed and performed quickly. It all happened in one day, more or less. I mean, he prepared it a few months in advance, and then it just, the recording session was one day.
I was trying to think, what this reminded me of something that was driving me crazy, and I just got it. Do you know Jürgen, I think the last name is Knieper, Jürgen Knieper? He did the soundtrack for the film Wings of Desire.
And there's Wim Wenders.
Wim Wenders, the filmmaker, for sure. But the composer who did the music for it, there's a scene in a library where they're going through the library and the voices sound very similar to this.
I was been meaning to go through Wim Wenders' films recently. That's interesting. I'm going to check it out. Also, someone's pointed out like Bulgarian voices and things like that have a similar kind of few tonal runs that are almost sympathetic. This was like a lot of auto-tune and things like that where I like misaligned the actual score with what it ended up being, so I like would force a singer's note upwards or something like that to run into an artificially higher note than it was composed in. And it almost sounded quasi-Bulgarian in some sense.
Let's listen to a little more in the clear here.
I was kind of intrigued at the ending. Is this kind of Escher-like style of risatones tones that keep rising, but there's like notes that are overlapping, so it seems like it's always going upwards in the scale, but it's actually like an auditory effect where lower notes are coming in to supersede, and it's like this feeling of continual ascension. It's
mind blown.
Yeah, check it out. I don't know.
Well, you're thinking about this music on such a completely different level. As someone like me, you know, I make music. I'll go get a synth and I'll use the sound off the rack and think, this is pretty cool and I can play around with this sound. But you are working on such a granular level with some of this stuff.
Yeah, I guess I kind of come out of like computer as an instrument. And so for me, a synth is great, you know, as a beginning, as a sound source, but performed on its own in a bare state is boring or something, or it's just not enough. So I put it through digital audio and like break it apart and turn it into fog, or you know, granulate it, like you say, like work with the grains of sound, work with sound in its microscopic way, and almost like a spray gun or something like that.
Does the technology drive the songs, or do you think you already know what you want to do before you...
Yeah, it's like a deeply ambivalent relationship with technology. I use the computer, but I'm by no means a technophile. I'm like actually kind of like, it's a struggle, you know, to wrestle with this like computer that keeps like overloading and, you know, crapping out or constantly giving you problems. So it's like, it's not something I enjoy per se, but it's the tool I find the best. It's like the symphonic voice of 2016. It's like, it's the way you can create a torrent of sound easily, quickly, powerfully, and by yourself if you need to be. And that is like significant and has been for a while, you know?
Do you ever find that you have a relationship with the computer in a way? Like when I make electronic music, especially in the early days in the 70s and early 80s of making music with computers, I always found, and you called it the struggle, but sometimes there were things that were happening that almost felt like it was symbiotic, that there was like, even when the accidents happened, you felt like it was pulling you in some direction that would be door opening, because you would never have gone down that path.
Yeah, I consider it like shepherding like 200 stray cats, and they're like running, and you can do is kind of reach your arms out and just kind of funnel them forward, and those cats go where they need to go, and you you just, you know, you're a bit of a victim where you have to surrender to the, you know, things out of your control. Uh-huh. And once you get to that point where you don't need to micromanage everything, it becomes an opportunity to see what comes out, and it's like, it affords a state of play, I guess, or something.
But then as a composer, like, how do you know, like, I never could imagine the music I could make. Like, I just work with the tools, and then as a more like sculptor, I'd start to hear something and I'd chip away and try to make more of that or less of that or something. But you seem to have this, if I understand it, you seem to have a goal kind of more in mind and a sound, and you are using the tools to get you to that sound?
Yeah, I think it's a feeling more than anything, like a feeling that guides like how the music should sound. And it kind of questions the idea of composition. It questions the idea of originally writing something. Like, the foundation of a lot of these pieces are medieval choral works that I took and rewrote for like synthesizers and then worked on them pretty thoroughly. But their origins are, some of them are rooted in appropriation or rooted in reference that has been like transformed or pitched or changed or stretched, you know, longer.
The composer probably would have no idea that there was their
absolutely
piece, right?
So at a point, it becomes a legitimate act of composition. Effectively, I'm trying to say it's like you go about, you know, using materials into your own process, and at some point you do enough work to it where it becomes a legitimate piece that you've created, you know? Mm. And it undermines the idea of originally writing music on a, you know, sheet paper and then having that executed by performers or whatever.
You want to listen to another, a little bit of maybe music of the air and talk
sure
more about the vocals and how you got there? Okay.
With a choir in Reykjavik that was recommended to me by Johan, and it's a group of 8 people, it's 4 females and 4 males, and we had them basically just improvise as well as, you know, perform the score that we had at hand, which was very short. It was more or less a motif that was, you know, it's really intended to be like a plastic source for me to manipulate the sound further rather than a finished piece. And so we took it that way. We took the recording session as an ability to just capture some kind of feeling that I could then go and treat the voice and treat it like a synthesizer or something else to make, push further into something else. And so I, like, you know, more or less treated this with a bunch of effects like auto-tune and reverberation and delay and pitch shifting to kind of, you know, I wanted to like denature the voice from a bunch of different like meaning sources, like male, female, you know, Icelandic voice. Like, I didn't want that kind of stereotypical, what is for me, you know, Icelandic, you know, way of singing something. And I wanted to transform that, and I think I got it there, but it was just also leaving it in a state of, you know, almost natural, you know? So I kind of wrote a line between it being fully transformed or disfigured and this bare recording that you can actually hear the voice still bubbling up.
I love that. Were there any lyrics at all, for lack of a better word, or is it this all mostly tonal?
Yeah, we went with reverse Latin for this.
What's that?
Just vowels, basically, you know, Latin words but put in recto verso so that they didn't have any meaning at all. It just became like an alien language, or like Dothrakian or something, you know. It's like, didn't matter. And it just, then, you know, the burden of text, the burden of it, you know, is she saying something, does that mean anything, isn't so much, you know, on the, yeah, just the world of lyricism drops away and it becomes like tonalities and melody and almost could mean something. Like I often like hallucinate and hear like words. Like I have my own lyric sheet for this music, but you know, that the beauty of that is it would be totally different for someone else, and I like that personally.
So where's emotion come into play here? You've stripped away the meaning of word, which often is what gets us to understand a song. So there isn't that. This feels real planned out in a way that doesn't feel emotionally planned. You're going for feeling, but I'm trying to kind of get what the feeling is and how you even conjure it up, given this somewhat seemingly, I'm going to use the word random, but it's not, but somewhat seemingly random processes that go on here.
Yeah, I mean, they're random and they're not. It's like, you know, 10, 15 years of working leads to a certain kind of way of, you know, going about your studio practice. Mm-hmm. But it's also just like an intuition, you know, of like what feels like a finished piece. And for me, what feels like a feeling, you know, that feeling might be really narrow and prescribed and, you know, strictly melancholic, or it might be ambiguous. And sometimes, like, a lot of these pieces are deep ambiguity, you know, it's like, you don't know whether it's like a kind of bright, joyful piece or a dirge or like something really heavy or melancholic. And I like riding those lines of like being blurred out and not being clear or not having that effect button prescribed for you, the listener, to feel a really specific way. I find certain like key modalities or harmonic movements, if you go from one chord to another, it, you know, neuroscience will tell us it triggers a very specific neurochemical effect.
You know, with like pop music, if you sit down to write a pop song, you know when you're done with the song, right? You've gotten through the, you know, you've done the bridge, you've got the chorus, you've done the A, B, C chords, and, you know, and you've written the words and it's done. But I wonder, when listening to this, when you know a piece is finished and when it's working.
It's just like an intuitive gut feeling where you start tinkering with things endlessly, it becomes worse. And it's like, you know, you just like, if you spend 8 hours trying to fix a bass line and then you listen the next day to the bass line and then you listen to what it was before and you're like, wow, that is like actually like flat, has no life. And I was like micromanaging that. And there's a certain grace that comes from a rugged, fast way of working. Like I work destructively, where I print things out when I work in a day, and I can barely come back and revisit and question any of those choices I make, so that I'm not left with these like, you know, 400 channels of recordings that I want to tinker with endlessly, and I'm stuck into these decisions I've already made, and it helps move things forward or something.
Just to make sure I understand that, what you're saying is basically the end of the day, you're at a place, you don't go back.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's kind of similar to how like the Beatles worked, you know, with using 4-track technology to make 16 channel recordings. They were forced to print things down and bounce them and then, you know, put those in one channel and then record with the empty space they made. Right. It's about making decisions and building over those decisions that you can no longer question. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's been an effective way to clear the mind and work forward.
Yeah, that's a whole new kind of discipline, right? When you have limitless possibilities.
Yeah, exactly. So that's like the kind of one of the like technological a priori's or like conditions is like it encourages you to question every micro aspect of your work. And, you know, in some ways, the fruit in the tree comes on the opposite, which is to like, I don't know, burn the tree or just, you know, harvest all the fruit at once and make juice right away.
Right. Yeah, I do this thing, and Robin has done it too. We make an album in a month, February 1st, February 28th, and it's one of the most liberating things ever, because especially being an electronic musician, it's an endless well.
It's a rabbit hole for
right.
sure.
And
big time.
And being pushed into a place where you need to make decisions and you do them based on gut is a great place to be.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that in what you do.
For sure. Thank you very much.
We never asked you what brought you to want to work with the human voice in the first place like this, to make it such a centerpiece of your work.
It came out of like just thinking about where to take my work and like what to do that would give me some, you know, challenge. And this was a challenge. It came up you know, a person I work with named Ben Frost quite a bit. He has recorded some of my recording sessions in Iceland in the past few albums, and it just came out of a beer we had together and talked about it, and it was like something I kind of stuck with and went with. And yeah, it's just like, give yourself a challenge, you know. I was against drums and I was against the voice for like a long time, and it was like not a softening of that, but it was just like shifting in some ways.
Well, I think you found a way to make the voice work with your music in a way that it could only work with your music.
Thank you. I'll take that as the highest compliment.
Fantastic. Thanks for doing this.
This was really nice chatting, guys. Good. Thank you very
Likewise.
Much.
Cheers.
Thanks. Have
take
a good
care.
Day.
You too.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.